So, as some of our lovely listeners might have noticed, this episode was taken off air for a while. And why? A lot of you have asked. Well, here is the thing. Sometimes in life, people throw you a curveball. And on this podcast, being all about authenticity and honesty, we had to make a choice of removing our guest of expertise for this episode, since we found out that she had been displaying some very dishonest and deceiving behaviors towards a lot of people. This is still something we're trying to grasp, but stay tuned for an episode on this in season 2 of Coming Home, where we will try to understand the mechanisms of these kinds of behaviors that we can all experience people displaying from time to time. But until then, here is my story. Without a guest of expertise, no doubt the shortest of all our episodes, but no less honest and from the heart. So hope you enjoy it.
For those of you continuing on, we wish you a safe and pleasant journey. If this is your final destination, we welcome you home.
After a time of having been isolated in our homes, it's easy to feel less at home than ever. To have been forced to stop and be still, to have spent more time with ourselves and maybe our loved ones, have made all sorts of things come up.
How do we feel connected? How do we find our own balance? How do we come home and move forward to find new and more sustainable ways of living? My name is Laura Bach.
And my name is Sandra Andres. In this podcast, we focus on the remarkable and life-changing stories that we all have. Because we do know one thing, maybe now more than ever. Regardless of our gender identity, profession, or nationality, we are more alike than we are different. And often it is a crisis that cracks our hearts wide open and brings us closer to ourselves. In this second episode, Laura will share her story of how she grew up hearing and seeing things others didn't, the inevitable crises that came from living inauthentically, and the long continuous journey of finding her way home.
Thank you for listening. Welcome to Coming Home.
It's great to be back.
It is, isn't it? I felt so good after the last episode, learned so much, and thank you, Sandra, for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you. It is a process, this thing of coming home.
Oh, for sure. And this episode will be very much about authenticity.
Oh, that word.
What is it all about? That's what we will get into today.
Yes, when you are sharing your story.
I am.
The funny thing about these stories and about being authentic is that we are afraid that people will judge us.
Oh, yeah, that's very much one of the things. And because you have been judged at one point. And then when that happens a few times, you're like, oops, okay, won't do that anymore.
Better protect myself.
Yeah. And then you figure out that you can't go through life like that.
No.
So without further ado, let's listen to where it all began.
I am 10 years old. I'm at my grandparents' place. My great-grandmother has just died, and it's the first time in my life someone close to me has passed away. The adults are still up, sitting in the living room talking. I'm lying alone in the guest room trying to fall asleep, and then I hear it, clear as a bell.
Min kære pige, du har lidt forandret.
Which translates to, my dearest girl, you have your life ahead of you. I sit up, trying to see who's in the room with me. And then I see her, my great-grandmother. She's sitting on the bed next to me, and I don't feel an ounce of fear. The only way I can describe her presence is, she's just so full of love. Now, alive, she was known to be quite strict. She was the old school child, finish your meal, be seen, not heard kind of woman. But now, her energy is so mild and understanding and loving. And then she says it again.
Min kære pige, du har livet foran dig.
Then she smiles, and she's gone.
So wait, you actually see dead people?
when you say it like that, okay, let me try to explain how this works for me, because obviously it's not like you sitting in that chair and how I can see you. It's more like, imagine that you've just seen a video of someone and they said something, or like a photo of them, and then you try to describe that to the person sitting in front of you. That's how it works for me. And it's more or less the same with how I hear things and the messages I get. You kind of hear something and then you replay it to the person that sits in front of you. That's really the best way I can describe it.
So you were born with these abilities to actually see and pick up on things that others didn't?
Yeah.
How was that like for you, hearing and seeing these things?
Since I was a child, what I remember was this state of just loving life. Loving people, loving nature, just feeling like I was light and that I wanted people to see their remarkable light, because I picked up on that when I was, you know, talking to someone, and then I would be like, oh, your grandmother's there, or your, you know, dad or whatever, and, you know, they're still there with you. And I didn't understand that it wasn't something that we all felt. Like, I thought it was just the way we were in this world. So two reactions came from that, from other people. One was, help me and sit next to me, and just be near me because it feels nice. And the other was, you are weird. Like, you're just attention seeking. That was their perception. You know, when you're ostracized like that, the feeling of loneliness is so, it gets you so desperate.
Another memory is looking around the classroom at my fellow peers. I was just a child, so were they. But I always felt like I didn't belong there. Like, I was not in the right place compared to them, and with a nagging feeling that there was something wrong with me. I would look at them, one by one, while letting the images and emotions of their current life drift in and out of me. They were not my images, not my emotions. I knew that it was theirs. But I would always feel this deep understanding, this love even for them. But only once did I speak what I saw. I was 12. And a boy in the class had hit someone else quite severely. He had done that a few times, so now the teacher had us all gathered to talk about it. And after giving a lecture on how we should treat one another, she posed the question to all of us. What do you think could help avoid these situations in the future? Different ideas were bounced around, and finally I gained the courage to speak out. I told them that this would never be resolved here in the classroom, because the real issue was in the home of this boy. His dad hits him, I said. The silence after that I will never forget. Everyone stared at me. The teacher just stood there. It felt like forever. And then they laughed. They all laughed at me. At my seemingly stupid suggestion of help for this boy. His dad was liked by everyone, so what I had just said seemed ridiculous and just attention-seeking. I felt like running and not stopping until I was on another planet. I looked at the boy. He wasn't laughing. Later that week, my parents were called in for an extraordinary parent-teacher meeting about me. I would never speak what I saw again. Until many, many years later.
So what was your way of coping with that?
You quickly learn these things. Like, you very quickly pick up as a child on, okay, that was weird. But the thing is that feeling that I was born with, which is such a love for life and people, that was taken over by the fear of people not loving me. And that's where the D root started, is when I spent more time adapting to what I thought they would like and then just completely losing who I was along the way.
I think so many people recognize themselves in this.
Isn't it?
That feeling. I know I do.
Yeah.
As a child, but just for, you know, it comes to us in different ways.
It does. And for me, the part where it got really dangerous was that when you start losing yourself, you stop speaking your truth and you don't know who you are anymore, you become boundaryless. You don't have any boundaries because I didn't know where they were. I didn't know what was okay and what wasn't okay because I didn't know myself anymore.
Wow. There are so many different expressions of this, right? Of the, mm-hmm. the what you describe when you stop being yourself and honoring yourself.
Mm.
And this concept of just trying to figure out what pleases others.
Mm.
I recognize that so much. And I think so many people do.
I come to think of a very recent example for me of when I crossed my own boundaries, actually. I had a situation at work on a film set. For those of you who don't know, I usually work as an actress. And I ended up in a dangerous situation because I didn't honor my own boundaries and my inner voice. I was asked to do a stunt scene that felt quite dangerous, actually. The conditions for it were very bad and unpleasant. But when I brought my concerns to the director, he dismissed me like it was nothing to worry about, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't feel good, but I let it slide. You know, I tried to bring it up several times with other responsible people on the production, but I never got the clarity and safety that I really needed. And I never dared to say, no, I won't do it if you can't guarantee my safety. So we ended up doing the scene, and sure enough, it got very scary and unpleasant.
Oh, God.
Myself and my co-star were very close to getting badly hurt.
Oh, God.
And the whole thing was, you know, yeah, it was quite traumatic.
Yeah.
And afterwards, I realized that I hadn't fully honored my truth in the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you said before, I had only done it halfway. I wanted to please the people who had hired me.
That's it.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted the director to like me, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to cause too much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of honoring my inner voice and, you know, sticking by it, I let the people pleaser in me lead. I chose to avoid the discomfort, but it ended up being a bad and dangerous experience and even more uncomfortable because of it. It reminded me of my own responsibility of sticking to my truth and also how difficult that can be depending on the situation. Because that's something that comes up as well. I mean, let us just also mention that there are power structures at play that can make authenticity harder, despite of you knowing and hearing that inner voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
For example, I'm thinking about patriarchy and white privilege. You know, mm-hmm. it's reflected in all hierarchies at work. And it is everyone's responsibility to be aware of that and to try to change it.
Yeah.
I mean, a woman who speaks up is still and more often considered a bitch and labeled as, you know, more difficult than a man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I really think that that's why your story is so important, because I think that we all need to practice hearing and honoring our own inner voice to take it seriously, because I think we would support each other more and cultivate stronger societies together if we recognized our own voice. You know, and that makes us more easily support others in being heard and accepted when they are being authentic.
Mm-hmm. And what I have learned now, and this is something that I wish someone would have pulled me aside, just kept repeating to me until I really got it, is it always has greater consequences in the long run not being true to yourself than it has being true to yourself in the moment. And I'm such a great example of that. Because I hit a low point in my life. I ended up in quite a few abusive situations.
Oh.
And that is my consequence, the biggest consequence of not speaking my truth, not putting down my boundaries. And this is my beginning of coming home.
Mm-hmm.
Living this way and the consequences of it and the people I had invited in, all that had just completely broken me. I couldn't continue doing this to myself. And I was diagnosed with PTSD and anxiety, and I had multiple nervous breakdowns. And I had to make a decision to start over, to just completely put myself back together anew.
Did you feel like, so you had built this kind of persona that you felt like, this is not me at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I just didn't know it at the time. So here's a small example from way back when I was with a partner and I was in distress and I said, I just don't ever feel like I'm enough. And he turned around and he looked at me and he said, well, you're not. And looking back, what I should have said was, no, dude, I'm not going to spend more time chasing after a version of myself that you feel like is enough. But I was just so shit scared of losing him, losing what I thought at the time was love. And instead I just said, oh, okay, well, what do you think will make me enough? Like, what can I do? What can I say that would make you think that I'm enough? And completely ignoring my own inner signals saying, like, this doesn't feel loving to me. Like, we're all enough, right? So
yeah,
I just let him drown out my boundaries and make his words my truth. I discovered that once your boundaries are crossed again and again and again, and you don't notice it until, or you ignore noticing it, until it has that consequence of a proper crisis, because you can't, that's not sustainable. I mean, obviously this is not sustainable living that way, but I didn't understand, see, because I was so good at it. So yeah. I was so good at, people thought, I thought that I was being genuine and being authentic at being me, because it was, I love loving people. Like, that's what I do.
So you put all your attention on others and not on yourself.
Exactamundo. That's exactly what I did. And so I had to face the fear, which had been the one that had been holding me back from being me, of history repeating itself, of nobody wanting to, like, play with me, nobody wanting to give me a job, nobody wanting to date me again.
Did you feel that? That was happening?
Oh, God, yes. Like 500 times a day. Each time I would be like, I'm not going down that road. I'm staying true to myself. I'm speaking my truth now. I mean, I'm not talking about crossing someone else's boundaries and just being horrible in the moment, saying like, well, this is what I feel. It's just speaking your freaking truth. Like, this is how I feel. And for me, I didn't even know this to begin with. I didn't even know what I felt or what I thought or what was the truth. So I had to sort of go like, oh, sorry, can I just say that again? Because that was actually not, I could feel it in my gut. So that inner voice we all have, that inner knowing,
yeah,
that is our nature. That becomes, when you do what I did, that becomes such a small little voice, and you really have to be still to listen. That fear had to become less important than the fear of losing myself again.
Did you feel when you started speaking up then, just to clarify, that you were losing people around you, or did you feel like that beforehand?
Now, changing myself, not being authentic, and having this very controlled expression of myself all the time, obviously people would react negative towards that as well, because it was inauthentic, and people, you know, tend to, you know, feel that when we're being inauthentic. So the kicker is that when I started speaking with love for myself, when I started thinking less about what other people thought, when I speak to you and I say something, I'm not going to have, you know, already in my mind, have five different reactions from you. And I'm going to pick the one that I want. And then I'm going to say it the way so I get that reaction. That's what I normally did. And I was so good at it and went very quickly and I just did it. Because that way I could control the whole situation. Now, obviously, that doesn't work. That's an illusion. You can't control other people's reaction. And again, other people's reaction have nothing to do with you to begin with, because that's their own shit most of the time.
Yeah.
It took me so many trials to do that again and again and again. But the thing is that the less I thought about it, the more I did that, and the less I thought about how they would react, the more positive feedback I got. So, you know, the reactions that I wanted to get from the beginning was basically what I got then, more and more. Staying with myself, no matter what happened, the stronger I got in my home, the more I attracted completely different people into my life. No more narcissists, no more people that for me wasn't healthy. And, you know, the emotional maturity that comes with me myself being more emotional mature.
Yeah, it's so interesting and fascinating how we attract what we, you know, exude without maybe sometimes knowing it. Then that's what we do all the time, but to become aware of it and where you can do something
awareness
about it. There's a lot of power, empowerment in that.
Oh, like it's everything.
Taking responsibility in a way.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, it is taking responsibility. And I just want to share that the two ways for me, I helped myself and took responsibility for my life and changing these this programming that I had done with myself. There are two tracks. One was that having PTSD and anxiety, everybody that has experienced that, they know that it's a very, very physical thing on top of a mind thing. So, you know, you could be buying groceries and all of a sudden your body goes into full survival mode. And you're like, why are we doing this, body? And it's like, oh, well, you know, it comes up with 500,000 scenarios. And you're like, but I'm just buying letters. I mean, what the fuck? Why are we doing this?
So you were clinically diagnosed with PTSD, right?
I was, yes.
Yeah.
I was. Yes, it was all the symptoms. I ticked all the boxes.
So it's like this like anxiety that is expressed in your whole body. Is what PTSD is? Because, I mean, PTSD, I think many relate to, you know, soldiers and war and so on. But that's why it's just great to hear about the definition of that, what happens.
Well, the definition for me, and I'm very sure that there are many, many, many others who have very different symptoms and experience in a very different way. But for me, it was very much a physical thing, and it felt like my heart would cramp. So just as someone has just died and you're going to find out in like 30 seconds. Oh. That feeling of, you know, something is wrong, but your body is sending you the wrong signals. You know, it's like it's not working. It's not functioning very well.
It's not listening to you.
It's not listening to the real world.
Yeah.
It's just making it up because it's to protect you, which is, you know, in a way, you know, okay, thanks, body, but let's do something else now because this is really draining. And you it has the power over you. So I understood that this is not a way to live. So I need somehow to get the power back. How do I do that? And what I did is I read up on neuroscience because I needed to understand why is this happening in my body when I don't want it to? How's my brain affecting that? How do I reprogram, and can we reprogram our brain even though we've had these traumatic events and we've had these experiences? And still things going on that are very difficult. How do you live with something being, you know, there in your life? So it's all about, for me, it was very much about having the scientific understanding of what I could do, very hands-on advice on how do you reprogram your brain. For me, it was very much to do with meditation, getting in a stillness with my brain so you can go into the autonomic nervous system, which then again speaks to your hormones, it speaks to your digestive system and so on. So I needed to know how to do that. And you can learn to do that.
Yes, I know. It's very comforting.
It's comforting to know that it's out there.
Yeah, and it works.
And it works. And we're definitely going to do an episode on it because it's a very empowering way to reprogram. So that's the one track. And the other track was, obviously, then we're back to the beginning and, you know, where it all started for me as a child. Of course, I needed to embrace what I came here with, my abilities, if you'd like.
Yeah.
And this is who I am. This is how I work as a human being and as a spiritual being.
And what are the abilities?
Yes. So I am able to pick up things within your field space, which I then can articulate to help you simplify your journey. I amplify your inner voice, if you'd like, bypass all the fears and ego and armor that we all put on. And whatever you need most right now to feel and remember what your nature is and start feeling safe enough to live from that place, that is what will come up. And of course, that's very different from person to person because we are very different in the way we protect ourselves. And one way that can show itself is loved ones that have crossed over, come into that space with a message of love, mainly for you to know that you're supported. For me, it's all about making people remember the remarkable light that they're made of and the strength that comes with that. That's what I do.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it feels pretty cool.
I'm just going to take it back again because, you know, you saw these things. You saw diseased people and you heard them. Mm. And then you also got images and messages from your friends about what was going on. Mm. But how, when you then started to suppress that part of yourself, did you stop getting those messages in a way?
I'm glad you asked that because if I can try to explain the energy that it has taken me to suppress these things, to ignore them, it's all about energy. We all know it. Coming into a room, someone has fought. We don't hear the fight, but we feel the feelings.
Absolutely.
So it's that. It's just that. And that is multidimensional. And that's just what I'm able to pick up on. So the thing is that when you are working that way, it's like someone standing next to you, speaking to you, and you're trying to ignore them while having a conversation. So, and no wonder people thought I was really strange and weird sometimes. But, you know, so not doing that anymore, obviously, it's an enormous release of energy the right way. And it feels so easy and so light and feeling like I'm getting back to what I started with, the home I came here with.
But it can be so uncomfortable sometimes. I'm thinking, entering a room and you feel that, here, it's heavy, you know, and... And I'm thinking with you feeling it so strongly and getting more information than that, how does that not bog you down?
I've been tutored as well in this. So I've been taking lessons on how to do this by people who can also do this and, you know, are seniors in this and veterans and can teach me so much. So one of the things you learn, obviously, is to not go in anyone's field until you are first invited in. Use it where it was supposed to be used. My ability is used to serve other people in the right way. So it doesn't pop up here and there and everywhere because I'm learning how to use it the way it was supposed to. This always comes from a place of light. This comes from a place of love. So I've encountered quite a lot of people who are quite afraid of these things. And they don't want to talk about, you know, any of their loved ones sort of being there in their field because it really freaks them out. And I completely understand and respect that. But I just want to say that it is always done with such love. So this us opening up to the multidimensional beings that we are, we are as much as part of an ecosystem than nature is. We have just completely, excuse my language, fucked it up with fear and ego and comparison and all those things that are so based on inadequacy and not feeling enough. If we could just remove that and actually realize once and for all the strength and the light of our own beings, this is where we need to learn to live from. The light that you can see in people's eyes when they realize what they're truly made of.
That's cool.
That is everything. Because what happens is when you start looking at life that way, and if you start feeling these energies and you let them in, first of all, they're there to help you. They're never there to pull you down. Why would that be? Like, that's not how nature works either. You know, obviously there is a give and take in nature, but it's an ecosystem that wants to thrive and survive. We're the same. But right now we're doing very different things because we're afraid. And that's why, you know, I wanted to share my story to say, well, this inauthenticity that is based on fear and of being loved has the opposite effect. So let's cheer each other on to be authentic. Let's cheer each other on to actually realize that if we listen to that inner voice, it is so much more rewarding than listening to the external voice all the time and the fear and the ego in your head.
I mean, it's so messy finding and sticking by your truth,
finding your way home. It's definitely not easy, but I really do feel that with practice and the support of each other, it will grow stronger and stronger within us. No?
Yes. Thank you for sharing your story, Laura. This was really eye-opening and enlightening for me in so many ways. Big shout out as well to our partners at Tweak Sweets for making this podcast possible. They are making delicious candy that is so much better for you because it has got 95% less sugar than regular candy. As a listener, you can actually go to their website, tweaksweets.com, and use the code COMINGHOME20 and get 20% off a whole purchase. Check them out. This episode has been edited by Rehmatullah Sheikh. Our theme music is made by Yaya Music, a.k.a. Caroline Jungstrom. And our website is made by the great women at Seth & Osten Communication Bureau.
If you want to get in contact with Vanessa Page or find more on the topic of authenticity, visit cominghomepodcast.com. You can always drop us a line there or on Instagram or Facebook and let us know what resonated with you when you listened to today's episode. We would love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening to Coming Home with me, Sandra Andres, and Laura Buck. Take care and be kind to yourselves till next time.